My name's Julie Beale. I've done some articles in the past where I've been looking at smart technology and to do with identity and natural capital accounting, corporate social responsibility as connected to Agenda 21. And because of what's happening, I have delved into what the vaccines are all about, because the mainstream media is not telling us anything, and our alternative media was only giving us bits of information, and I wanted to know more.
Well, you're quite right. I know one of the things you focused on in your recent article on Activist Post is this whole thing about understanding proteins, because I mean, I certainly, back in the end of January when the Chinese released the COVID genome, which was then known as SARS-CoV-2, and there's a whole another story to tell about why they took the word SARS out of the name of this virus. Why is it that we've not understood, or what is it that you're trying to get across about proteins? Because I noticed that the virology units at the University of New Delhi pretty much straight away pounced on what they said were protein inserts into the coronavirus. Now, the coronavirus is something which is basically the common cold. It's very contagious. But they were saying that this particular possibly engineered version of the common cold contained these extra proteins. So why are proteins so important?
Well, I can't really comment on that because I don't know too much about that. But I decided to use the protein angle to draw all of my research together and to move on, because after all the research I've done, I've come to realize that it's not just about the vaccines, that it's about gene therapy, which is about production of proteins, and more than that, there's the But various things have been planned for us, such as clean meat, which is about growing proteins in the lab.
Well, that's right. Bill Gates is big on that, isn't he?
Yeah. And various kinds of blood products and stem cells and, there's all sorts of other things. But
gene therapy sounds like a quite a nice way of saying something quite nasty. What is gene therapy?
Well, it's basically synthesizing some genetic code in a lab and then producing that code and then getting it into the body. So it's us that obviously always has our own genetic code that does everything, and normally in the past we were people were injected with viruses as a form of that's what we were told was our vaccine, and it was, it's something we can all relate to, we can understand. It's
well, hang on, how do you mean?
I am not someone who is pro-vaccine.
But I mean, if we get back to vaccines originally, I'm talking to you from Stroud today, which is just down the road from the home of Edward Jenner. He invented, I believe, vaccines. I mean, he's the guy that inoculated someone against a woman, I believe, against cowpox against smallpox by giving her cowpox. So is that what you mean by when you say you put a virus into somebody to and that can then teach their body how to fight another virus?
Ask me again, sorry, Tony.
Is the idea that you put one type of virus into somebody in order to teach them their body how to react to a more dangerous virus? That's what we got from cowpox and smallpox.
Right. No, it's so far removed from all that. That's really the only point I was trying to make, is at least in the standard vaccinations that people have become accustomed to, you can kind of get your head around what it is. But these are much harder. So I've tried to make it easier, and I'll try and sum that up now.
I mean, can I say for a start that I don't think they should maybe be calling these things vaccines, because they're not actually the same kind of thing at all as Edward Jenner was playing with.
No, not at all, not at all. The only way that it can be seen as being the same is in terms of how they measure the response. That's the only way you could say that it's the same. And that is measuring what kind of antibodies you produce and how many. That's the only way. I suppose it's basically like Frankenstein. Well, if I just run through the three main vectors, do you know, I think I need to explain the word vector, because it's not immediately apparent. It's like a delivery vehicle. They've got to get that those genes or the DNA or mRNA, just think of it as genetic code that tells your body what to do. And this is basically trying to bypass your own system, which is obviously already trying to tell your body what to do. Well, this is going to have someone come in and like whisper at a lower level below HQ, as it were, to go, no, actually, go on, do this. So the code is trying to be the same as the virus. And then the response that your body is meant to, the response from your body is meant to go, oh, look, that looks like, that protein looks like a virus to me. I know what to do. I'll make some antibodies. Right. So anyway, they've got to get that code from the needle into your blood cell, into your cells in your body. Sorry, not just in your blood. They can go into your organs and your tissues. But the point is that they're not going to work until they get into the cells. So they've got three vectors, which is a delivery vehicle that they wrap up the genes or the genetic code in. One of them is an adenovirus, never been licensed. The other is nanoparticles for mRNA, neither of which have ever been licensed. And the other is a DNA bacterial plasmid, followed by electroporation, which I can explain, and that's being used by Inovio amongst some other companies, but I'm only talking about the front runners.
Okay, so this has basically been a massive bonanza for these various vaccine firms to try and develop the like next generation vaccines. And I guess
Tony, no? You say next generation, how long do you think they've been in development for? Just out of interest, I thought.
Okay, I'm going to guess because I know a bit about the CRISPR vaccines. I would say something like 10 years.
31 years. The first gene therapy trial.
A long time. Now, the obvious question here is maybe that these things weren't safe enough to use.
That's what I think. And they haven't reached phase 3 trials either. There's so many of them, Tony. There's so many.
Yeah, do you know how many different vaccines are being developed at the moment?
Well, I haven't counted them, but there is one that I could try and talk about that I've just been trying to look into a bit more, because I've been desperately trying to find, because I just spent the last few months just kind of going through all these like previous trials of I've tried to just stick to trials of vaccines using these three vectors, you know, to carry the genetic code. And I haven't been able to find any phase 3 trials. But I did find one I've found one for Ebola. And that's a very unpleasant sounding. It uses two different kinds. It's a J&J, it's Johnson & Johnson, their Janssen's division. It's it's like basically two different kinds of vaccines. And this is one of the things that worries me that I kept reading while I've been doing my research, is that one of the tricks they're suggesting is that to use two different vectors on one person. So they might try and do that. But my general theory is that this whole Rona scam, part of the reason that this is being done is to bring in these gene therapy products, because as soon as they, like, basically all of the other things, like, they have managed to get a few cancer products licensed, and I think one for some eyesight problem. It's easier to be more understanding about someone wanting to do that, but to tell us that we all have to have this, like, for a non-existent problem, no. But you know, they haven't been able. I think one of the reasons they haven't been able to do the trials is because they've got nothing. Like, there's no disease like to test it on, except things like Ebola or whatever that they can, like, oh yeah, you know, oof, pandemic. Ooh. So it's a lot more than vaccines, basically, is what I'm trying to say. You know, there's
well, this is an interesting point, isn't it, that you've got they're talking about when the vaccine is ready, but actually there's lots of different types of vaccine, and maybe they might introduce, as they already have in Russia, different vaccines.
Yes, exactly. There's another sort of interesting side to all of this, which is it's basically, I think, also opening the door to a more widespread use of genetic products and synthetic biology.
We've already had the designer babies. I mean, that would have been absolutely unthinkable, certainly after World War II. But now it seems to be becoming the normal, with the Japanese and Chinese leading the way, but the British and the Americans following very quickly. So it seems to me that it's becoming so-called acceptable to go in and fiddle with human genes now.
Yeah, exactly. But there's still things in their way, Tony. So Bill Gates, this is one of the things that I haven't looked into enough. There was an interview with, what's he called? Was it Jonathan Statham with James Corbett on the Corbett Report? And he looked into this. But let's say that Bill Gates was accused of trying to bribe the Convention on Biological Diversity about gene drives for his, you know, he's got a pet thing about mosquitoes and malaria. And I have then gone further into, basically, because I was trying to understand what regulations was holding the really, you know, the licensing of these gene therapy products, and it appears to be the Nagoya Protocol and the Cartagena Protocol from the Convention on Biological Diversity, and it's to do with data and access to, sorry, sort of data sharing and access to data. Those are the two key things. This is another thing that I'm going to be writing about, and yeah, I'm only going to touch on it here, basically. I don't want to say anything that I'm not sure of.
Do you want to tell us about your series that you're writing? Because you started off by doing this one about proteins. The proteins, I suppose, are the bits that cause the illness, whereas the virus and your body tries to fight it. Obviously, the virus is the one that's carrying these nasty proteins around.
That's right, yeah. So the viruses are said to release proteins of a certain sort of shape and size, and that then your body learns to recognize it. So
one of the things we've been told, Julie, haven't we, is that, oh, well, this COVID-19 is different. We think that people can catch it multiple times.
Yeah. Well, there's another thing that I'm writing about at the moment is another potential pandemic looming on the horizon with a different virus. Have you heard about the swine flu that's said to be developing in China?
Well, that China has had a lot of problems with swine flu, hasn't it? Because they had some would allege that even that it was a biological warfare attack on the Chinese's ability to farm and feed themselves. But that was last year, I believe. So they had to kill almost every pig in China.
Yeah, there's like just two things. There's swine flu and there's African swine fever, which is a hemorrhagic disease. So that is why they killed off most of their pigs last year, this African swine fever. But I'm talking about H1N1. Apparently, you know, that was the 1918-19, you know, the Spanish flu pandemic has, it's been mutating and sharing genes with pig flu, let's call it, swine flu, and avian, like bird flu, and apparently it's happened again. It's like it's called reassortment, and there's been quite a lot of attention given to it, which is what raised my interest, because the World Health Organization has decided to take it upon itself to invest in sort of becoming the sort of mouthpiece for Agenda 21. I mean, basically, I just feel that the World Health Organization is basically in charge of everything from now on, because it's everything's because virus. I feel like
thing about all this, Julie, it'd be interesting to get your take on it, is the way that this is just a pandemic, whether you believe it actually fulfilled the criteria to be a pandemic or not. There was certainly something out there that was killing people, even if it was less than were killed by the flu a couple of years ago. There was certainly something around. But we're being told, aren't we, that this is going on and on and on. And it's almost like the endless wars. You know, in the old days, the wars used to start and then they'd finish. And now there's this kind of thing of the endless wars. It's almost like we've now got the endless pandemics too. So do you think there's any justification to continuing after most of the people who died of the COVID seem to have died by May, June, and yet it seems it's been going on and on and on now?
There's absolutely no justification. It is entirely disproportionate. I have seen nothing which convinces me that anyone can prove that the so-called coronavirus has caused particular illnesses. I'm not saying that I know either way or not. So all I can go on is the mortality rates from all causes. And out in the UK, the mortality rates from all causes, in other words, the overall death rate in the UK, has been at or below average for the last 5 years since the middle of June. So that's 3 months where everything's fine. And then
people will say, well, that's because loads of people were killed off by COVID.
Most of them were old, and I believe that it was because they were moved from hospitals into care homes, my mother being one of them, and I know that she's not received doctor's care, and I know other people are not receiving doctor's care, care from any kind of social care, friends care, you know, personal care, anything. We're all suffering.
People have been abandoned, haven't they?
Yeah, I feel we've all been abandoned. I think it's extremely cruel what's happening. I cannot believe it.
There's only one voice I've heard in the medical profession, who is Alison Pollock at Newcastle University. She was saying that the measures were barbaric, but we haven't heard much from her since. That was on Radio 4 back in April.
Was it? Wow. Yeah, I wonder where she is then. We haven't heard enough from many people, and I can only draw parallels with Nazi Germany. How did it happen? I've always wondered, how did it happen? Well, now I'm living through it. And I certainly think that when it comes to, virologists, they're just in their element. They're not going to want to check the mortality rate. Why would they? This is their lifeblood. They're loving it. They're like in the spotlight. They're heroes of the moment.
Yeah, but some of them are actually speaking out, aren't they? Like those that said this was a bioweapon. I wonder whether you reckon it was a man-made virus or not.
I've just watched a video again a couple of nights ago. I think is it Montagnier, the guy who was said to have first isolated the HIV virus, and he said, I mean, he sounded very plausible. So that's all I can say. He said that he thought that there was insertions in there that had been genetically created. Yes. So yes, it's. I think it's possible. But none of us are ever going to know, are we?
I actually never agree with people that say that, Julie, because I think there are people out there that know.
I mean,
It's impossible to permanently keep a lid on things like this, that eventually they all leak out, and they do leak out ultimately. Anyway, back to these vaccines, so-called vaccines, as they're being all worked up. And we know that the testing regimes on them, the safety regimes, are being basically sidelined, where, for example, many of the vaccines are not having any animal tests whatsoever. So normally they would think of injecting somebody with something that was untested. But in this time, they're taking willing volunteers, incredibly. I can tell you I'm not one of them, at least I hope I'm not, to try these things out. Who are the front runners, do you think, for the vaccine, which is going to get the rubber stamp from the World Health Organization, and then people will only be able to go kind of back to normal once they've had this. What are the front runners in this vaccine world?
Certainly leading the way is AstraZeneca. They've got more than one vaccine, one of which they're producing with Oxford University. If you think about it in terms of vectors, then we've got J&J or Janssen and AstraZeneca using the adenovirus vector. And then we've got Pfizer with BioNTech, CureVac and Moderna all using nanoparticles with mRNA. And then Inovio is using the DNA plasmid with electroporation.
So can you just take us through those three different types of vaccine and maybe just explain for the layperson what, how they work, how each one is designed to work? Because, I mean, I think most people listening to this, Judy, will not be even contemplating having a vaccine, but they may wish to know, what it is that their friends and loved ones are taking. So
yeah, exactly.
Can you just take us through those different types of vaccines they're working on, please.
It's quite a big question, that, Tony. Like, how do I start that?
Well, for example, the nanoparticle vaccines, how do they work?
Basically, they have the mRNA sort of encased in the nanoparticles. The challenge they've got, as I started to say earlier and didn't carry on with, is getting it through, through the skin, and then the genetic code that they've created you know, in it from molecules in a laboratory has to be able to get through our cells. So, because inside the cell is the nucleus. All right, so when I started all of this research, I was watching videos about proteins and DNA, mRNA, how all that works, and I'm still not that good at it, but I do recommend people try watching things, because you're not going to be able to get it based on what I've said.
Okay, I mean, well, look, anyway, so
I'm quite happy to carry on.
Yeah, this is injected into your blood, but then the idea is that they want this DNA to make its way right way through your body, so every one of your cells is eventually changed by it.
No, it doesn't necessarily have to travel. Apparently, it's not that good, and it tends to stay. I think mainly it tends to stay near the site of injection. They're not necessarily, they just want to get enough of it into you and get it. That's their being their problem, is how to get it into the cell, because it has to then, so that's how a virus works, apparently, right? It gets into the body, travels through the bloodstream, and then when part of it can lock on to a cell, it will it will lock on and then kind of start to fuse with the cell, so that it can sort of, I won't use the word rupture because I've never seen that, but it basically gets into the cell, and then it has a sort of transformation, the virus, then a normal virus, where it sort of it degrades inside the cell, and that's where its mRNA or its DNA, you know, its genetic code is unleashed, and it starts replicating more of itself, and that's what you call an infection, right? So what they're trying to do is kind of like do the same thing, right? So they have like a fake, you know, like a, instead of, you know, a coronavirus, it's an adenovirus, or there's all sorts of things like horse pox and all sorts of other nasty viruses being used for other things, but let's say it's an adenovirus, and then it's been modified, like, so our body is meant to go, oh look, it's an adenovirus, like, because that's how it looks on the outside. But then, so they're using that virus because it can naturally sort of get into the cell. And then once it's inside, then it has to dissemble, as it were, sort of fall apart, release the code. And then the code obviously has to work as well. So this is their main objective. Nanoparticles, for instance, is just like a way that they've like found that they can wrap the code up in them. You know, and obviously they are surviving the journey, and they are, you know, to the cell, and they are getting into the cell, and then doing the job, the third bit, which is, that then they're releasing their the code inside the cell. So then those just go into the cytoplasm of the cell. Some viruses go all the way to the nucleus, but not the adenovirus. It's not meant to, anyway, right? So that's why they're using that one, right? And then mRNA is produced, well, not produced, its place is in the cytoplasm of the cell. So the nanoparticles are only going just inside the cell wall, whereas the DNA DNA code encased in a bacterial plasmid, which is the third method that I've mentioned that Inovio is using, that because it's DNA, that has to get right into the HQ of the cell, which is the nucleus. So it has to go that a little bit further. And that's one of the reasons that they're using electroporation. And I am currently writing an article about various problems to do, because it wouldn't be up to me to say what problems have been discovered or what problems experts would say that these things could cause. So I've just compiled everything I've found that any expert or study has said, right? So, I mean, definitely DNA is potentially more of a problem in terms of it changing your genome, because that's what everyone's saying, right? So you referred to it earlier. I need to sort of talk about this bit now. And this is the only thing about all of my studies that's made me feel a bit better, and I really don't want to try and make anyone think that, hey, everything's okay, because it's really not. But I was hearing all the time that I was going to be injected with something that would change me forever. Now, I do want to point out that I do think that these people are so evil that they could do that. But if they did, they would have to be using a different technique to all of the things that I've been describing, because it's gene editing is not the same as gene therapy. And gene editing uses techniques such as CRISPR-Cas9 to, you know, because obviously it's like sort of like needlework in a way. I mean, like, obviously even more, you know, it's so, yeah. That's a very fine-tuned thing they're doing there. But, I mean, Tony, there are so many things they could do. They could, you know, sterilize us. I personally think it's unlikely that they're going to put chips in, but maybe this is their only chance. But, you know, the only reason I think that is because I don't think the chips are much use. They just need us using our mobile phones.
Well, you're right. I mean, if your DNA is being altered, yes, that could be quite a simple way of sterilizing people. We know for a fact that Gates and his chums have been around Africa sterilizing
HPV vaccine,
using other methods. So that's obviously part of their eugenics game plan.
So it is possible, isn't it? You see, yes.
Yeah, so I think the other thing, maybe we should just talk a bit about the, I mean, do you want to talk about your first, is it the adeno or type of
adenovirus?
Because we've talked a bit about the nano, a bit about the plasmoid DNA, and then there was your first one we haven't really explored much.
Well, all right then, I'll try and, you know, I'm not a full expert, but I will try and talk a bit more about the adenovirus, because one thing that I think people should know is that in possibly one of the reasons that gene therapy and the branch of gene therapy which deals with vaccines has suffered, you know, not being seen in a good light, as shall we say, is because some people have died in trials. So I think the first person was Jesse Gelsinger, and he was given an adenoviral vector. So, I mean, all of these people that are, you know, they all had something wrong with them. They were not healthy.
Well, they don't. Surely they don't allow people with health problems to do these trials, do they?
Well, yes. Yes, that's been my, I think their main sticking point is that all they've got is ill people, you know, like they can't really tell what it's doing to someone when they're already, you know, dying of cancer.
My understanding is that the vaccine trials have been on healthy people, and that if you turn up to do a trial and they find some sort of health complaint, they'll say very sorry and they might just save your life. Initially, when I spoke to you a few years ago, Julie, we were talking about this smart ID, the idea that people would have to have a kind of ID card style thing to use to sign in on their computer, so they didn't have to type in those tedious passwords and all that. And also in order to get state benefits, all that kind of thing, and maybe even to use a bank account. But I just wanted to ask you about the ID 2020, because the concept before seemed to be, well, we were going to use some kind of digital ID, which would be we'd have to have in order to get our state benefits. We might have to use in order to identify ourselves with the bank. It might be a kind of credit card. There's various different ways. So, for example, we might want to use it when we were identifying who we were to a computer somewhere. But this has kind of appeared, hasn't it, as part of the pandemic in this ID 2020, the concept that without a vaccine ID to prove that you've had a vaccine, you may not be able to go back to normal. So this will be a very great inducement for tens or if not hundreds of millions of people to have a vaccine because they're fed up with all these COVID measures.
Yes, it's definitely been linked to identity. That was almost a masterstroke. And then to bring in MasterCard as well, so that the financial side of it, you know, certainly, you know, in Africa or whatever. All of the technology, let's say, you know, the sort of algorithms that they need and the agreements and everything, it's all worked out in terms of the identity thing. And it's just, like you say, it's just about getting us to start using it, basically. And so it'll be linked to the... Apparently, we're going to be getting a vaccination certificate from the government. Like, so if you get, when you get your vaccine, they'll give you a certificate. So I reckon that'll be, you know, all of it is going to add to this identity thing. You won't be able to go anywhere without proving who you are.
Yeah, this is another thing which occurs to me, Judy, is that we've got a system over in China, haven't we? They call the social credit system, where everybody has got a kind of little score that the government keeps on them. And if they're a good boy or a good girl and they're very obedient, that they get a high score.
Yes.
And one of the punishments that you get is that you're not allowed to go to places, you're not allowed to travel, that sort of thing in China. Well, that actually seems to have been part of the whole COVID here in Britain, where, you know, for example, in North Wales and South Wales and various other parts of the country and Scotland, you're not allowed to travel. So it just all sounds a little bit authoritarian and Chinese. I wonder if you think I'm over-egging that one a bit.
No, I think you're under-egging it, Tony. There's I really hope that people can find some information online, you know, like some good documentaries about the social credit system in China and how limiting it is. It's exactly the same system coming in here. They just announce it. They just kind of go more softly the way they're saying it. That's the only difference. And how it's announced and dealt with and brought in.
Yeah, okay, so at some point, possibly, you know, there may be microchips stuck inside us, and that might be for convenience. But what amazes me is that quite a lot of people seem to be going along with all of this. And I suppose it's partly, Judy, because they don't have the technical knowledge or information to challenge what they're being told. They're being told they're doing it, it's being done for their own safety.
Well, I think it's basically people are so afraid for themselves, you know. They just don't know what to believe, Tony. I reckon a lot of them, you know, they just think, I just want to be safe, and they would just want to hide away and hope that it will be over. But I don't share that belief. I think this is never going to stop unless we stop it.
Well, I mean, there is attempts to stop it this week. I mean, maybe even just the first faltering steps, but at least something fairly tough, in that the MPs are going to get to scrutinise the national policy on COVID measures, and we're not going to get ruled by diktat anymore. I mean, I do think we've got a bit of a battle royal brewing over all of this globally, and obviously Britain is playing its own part. I mean, can you see any light at the end of the tunnel? If we're thinking, well, actually, we don't want to have a mandated vaccine, a vaccine is not going to help us, it's more likely to hinder us if we look at Bill Gates' track record.
So do you mean light at the end of the tunnel in terms of vaccines?
Well, I mean, in terms of fighting the vaccine program, the social credit program, which seems to be being rolled out across the West at the moment.
Too right, I do, yeah. Even just out of principle, Tony. Too right. Yes, I do. We should never, ever accept bad treatment from people. And the government is being evil. I will never accept it. Never.
Why do you say evil?
Because the whole world is suffering, and I think a lot worse is going to happen. Because this is clearly a plan. It's been prepared for, although, I mean, there are theories that they weren't ready to do it yet, but I don't know.
Well, certainly I heard that. Alex Craner was the hedge fund manager and the author of the book about the Magnitsky Act, about Russia and trying to demonize Russia. He was saying that he thought that maybe it had been rolled out early because they couldn't actually get a war going, and they planned to bring out something like this during a war. But, you know, what would you say to people who are worried that their loved ones are embracing this idea of having a vaccine when they're actually rather concerned about it and they don't want to touch it with a barge pole?
Okay, well, I do have something to say about that, actually, that I'm looking into at the moment. And I heard the term fire hosing. Have you heard that?
No.
All right, well, I looked it up. And, you know, there's a Wikipedia entry, but there was also, it referred to a document by the RAND Corporation and Evil Corporation. Oh, I've got to be careful using that word. But anyway, it's very valuable, and I would advise people to read it. Yes, I'm advising people to read a RAND Corporation document. It's accusing the Russians of fire hosing, which is basically an out and out, you know, just, it's basically what's being done to us now, where all forms of media are used to blast out messages of which many are confusing and disorientating to the person receiving them. But the general idea is that whatever goes in first, you know, by a source that's seen as authoritative, becomes that person's belief, and then it becomes hard to change it. And it's saying it offers a few tips in this article about how to counter the effect of fire hosing, and it says, one thing that it doesn't really have much of an effect is the squirt gun of truth. So I realized, you know, because apparently, right, so yeah, apparently when someone has a strong belief system and you present alternative views or, you know, a set of facts to them, they will dismiss it to the point where it actually strengthens their own beliefs. So if you were to say, you know, just an out and out, no, that's absolute rubbish, I think it'd probably be better to go, yeah, I know what you mean, but hey, I am quite worried about those vaccines myself, to be honest. Did you know that they're not being licensed? Did you know that they've been around for they've been like planning those for over 30 years, but why have they never been licensed? Why doesn't the news, why don't they ever talk about those on the telly? Like, I didn't know they were going to do that. What's DNA? What's MRA? You know, I think that just instead of looking like you're trying to change someone's mind, basically, is to, and then the other thing is to try and to get to them first, like to give them information of what you think is going to be done by the fire hosing side, as it were, so that you can so that then they're less influenced by it because they're prepared for it. Does that make sense?
I mean, yeah, it does. Yeah, I mean, you know, so the idea really being to sort of almost like second guess the other side and saying, well, they're going to try this next or they'll try that next or whatever, which could be anything, couldn't it? I mean, it could be a terrorist attack, it could be a war, it could be a second virus.
Well, that's why I'm writing about that H1N1. It's called a G4, just if anyone's listening, G4EA, which stands for Eurasian Avian-like H1N1 Swine Flu. There you go. And I just thought it would be interesting to write an article about that and to show, like, with evidence, why it is I'm suggesting it and link it to, you know, previous false pandemics, fake pandemics. And
you also mentioned the Agenda 21, and I think there's another one, isn't there? Agenda 2030.
Now, that's part of Agenda 21. That's like agenda, like the 21 refers to the 21st century, and agenda, like, so 2030 is just like a sort of milestone as part of Agenda 21. That's how that works.
Well, maybe they said that, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was all about 2021 and the Great Reset, because it does.
Well, as occurred to me, actually, Tony, it's just too much of a coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah. And what do you make of the Great Reset? Because that is obviously something which has been being cooked up for quite a while. We've got the two main people, Klaus Schwab, who's the boss of the World Economic Forum. That is that kind of Bilderberg style meeting that you can't protest that, because they hold it in the middle of winter up on the top of the Alps. And, you know, anyone that wanted to protest it would be frozen to death. So they can't. And along with Prince Charles too, he's one of the main people involved in the Great Reset. What do you make of that?
Well, I'm just surprised at how blatant they are, to be honest. But they seem to be getting away with it. Although, is that because most people haven't heard? I think if most people knew that they were starting to talk about building, well, that the World Health Organization insisted that this COVID pandemic, you know, was teaching us that you know, all these things about the environment and that how we had to build back better in April. Like, I was just too early. They started like Bill Gates talking about the next pandemic when this one had just begun. It's too much for people. That's too blatant.
Well, I guess they hope that people aren't noticing these things, Julie.
Yeah, well, let's try and change that then, eh?
Yeah. Also, I do think that, you know, on the positive side, that certainly the government here, I mean, I'm not saying I have any great faith in them, but they've certainly managed to bring up quite a lot of the questions about whether or not these lockdown measures are wise, sensible, and we've even had the calls for the sacking of all the guys behind the lockdown, you know, the civil servants that are on those rotating revolving doors with the vaccine industry, you know, with Big Pharma basically. Anyway, so I just thought I'd if we can just round up, if you could just tell us what you think, you know, to sort of maybe show some sort of light at the end of the tunnel here, because I do think there's definitely a fight back. I mean, it's definitely fighting back against this deep state, whatever it is, Big Pharma, bankster alliance, which is trying to dominate the West. I mean, in the past, it seems that it's been very easy to tell people in China and places like that what to do, but not so easy here in the West, and they're not, I don't think, going to have too easy a ride. But what do you think, Julie?
For me, it all boils down to talking about the mortality rates, the numbers, and the way that the World Health Organization has changed the definition of pandemic. I can't remember to quote it, but it basically sort of removes the requirement for large amounts of illness and death. So if you whenever you are talking about the pandemic, it is important. I think a good question to ask someone is, what do you think pandemic means? And just take it from there, really, because that's part of what I was. I think that's not necessarily part of the anti-fire hosing technique. It's just kind of it's almost like a mothering technique. It's like, you know, or a teaching technique. You don't just lecture people. You probe their brain and get them thinking. Like, why do you think? So yeah, I would start off with that. If you were literally talking about like. How would you speak to other people that you know? I would start off by asking them what do they mean? Because I think most people think of it as, you know, I mean, what other reason is there for the word or the reaction to it? You know.
And so what do you think a pandemic is? And what's wrong with the definition?
That they have removed a requirement for large amounts of illness or death. It just has to be in infection spreading.
And that infection might even be just bits of dead virus that Tess is picking up inside your body.
Yeah, infection is one step up from where a lot of people who are apparently testing positive obviously are, because we haven't got illness. Infection can become illness, but just testing positive means you've just got a bit in you. That's why most people are classed as asymptomatic. Because they're not in, like, in other words, it hasn't like multiplied or replicated inside their body, the virus.
The other thing is, apparently, according to Michael Yeadon, Dr. Michael Yeadon, who used to work at Pfizer in their vaccine department, he's saying that these PCR tests pick up little bits of RNA or DNA or whatever that have been shredded, you know, by your body's defense systems, and they're just still hanging around from a successful booting out of the virus, and yet you're still being tested as positive.
Yeah, exactly. There are so many problems with those tests. The thing that really gets me is I cannot believe that people are going in the beginning it was all about deaths, and now they just talk about cases and nothing but yeah, anyway. It's not illness, put it that way.
Okay, Julie, whereabouts do people follow your posts then?
Okay, they're all going to be on activistpost.com. And if you forget, I'll say it again, activistpost.com. And if you do, I think in almost every article that I'm writing, I've sort of made up a word, Ronavax. I don't know if anyone else is using that. But it was my shorthand way. I didn't want to call them vaccines because of their stemming as they do from, well, because it is gene therapy. And it just rolls off the tongue more easily.
As we said at the start, this is nothing to do with Edward Jenner, cowpox and smallpox. The Rona scam or the Ronavax is, I think, a great term, which maybe we should be using more for whatever it is, this kind of gene therapy. And by the way, when I was in Dresden in 2016 at the Bilderberg meeting, I actually met one of the participants. I can't remember her name, but she was a very posh lady who was wandering around an art gallery. And she was one of the people who's one of the main funders and licensors of the CRISPR vaccines, really? Which were being developed at the time. Right. And I didn't really know who she was. I just asked her what she thought about Brexit, and then she turned on her heels, harumphed, and walked off in the other direction with her various security people then standing between me and her, so I couldn't follow her and ask her any other questions.
Oh, dear.
Well, it was all right. It was quite interesting. And I always find it, you know, I always think, I mean, because they said the Bilderberg conference this year was cancelled, apparently. But I would rather suspect that they meet, you know, quite secretly and get on with the core group. Anyway, the people around Henry Kissinger and Peter Thiel and Eric Schmidt will all be meeting together. To do their stuff anyway. But I mean, this is a transhumanist agenda, isn't it? I mean, I'm sure you were aware of that, which is the idea that these people are so wealthy that they think they're gods and they can make humanity and better than God did.
Yes, yes, absolutely. It's very much a transhumanist agenda, and we have to be replaced with machines and robots and synthetic biology.
Anyway, Julie Beale, thanks very much for joining us again.
Thanks, Tony. You take care. Thank you ever so much.
All right, nice one.